Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the skillful art of manipulation. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present The Sin Eater, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Confession Hustle. You ever heard of a sin eater? Probably not. It's one of those medieval things that history forgot, like leech doctors and public executions. Back in the day, a man would sit beside a corpse, eat bread and drink ale over it, and take on the dead man's sins. Absorb their guilt, their wrongdoings, their filth. The idea was simple. The dead moved on clean. The sin eater? Not so much. I modernized it. I confessed to crimes for money. Yeah, you heard me. You do the dirt, I take the heat. It started small, petty theft, possession charges, maybe an assault if the price was right. Nothing that would put me away for too long. Just enough to take the heat off the real criminal. You'd be amazed at the kind of people willing to pay for this service. Wealthy businessmen who didn't want their dirty little secrets exposed. Drug dealers with too much at stake. Politicians, cops, even celebrities. I was the guy you called when you had money to burn but couldn't afford to be in the hot seat. The trick was simple. I knew how to sell a lie. Cops aren't mind readers. They don't pull crimes out of thin air. They go off what people tell them, witnesses, snitches, and most importantly, confessions. And a confession from someone willing to take the fall. That's gold to them. Once you say the words, they stop looking. And that's why I never had a problem. Until Gabriel. I was sitting in Manny's Diner. The kind of place where the coffee tastes like burnt rubber and the waitresses have been working there since the Reagan administration. It was my kind of spot, low profile, anonymous, the perfect place to make deals without being noticed. The guy sitting across from me? He wasn't like my usual clients. Most of them looked nervous, sweating through their button-down shirts, constantly checking over their shoulders. Gabriel was different. Calm. Controlled. Like a man who had done this before. He was mid-30s, sharp suit, expensive watch, but there was something off about him. Something too perfect. His suit had no wrinkles. His nails were manicured. His smile didn't quite reach his eyes. And then he slid an envelope across the table. $50,000, he said, voice smooth as glass. I raised an eyebrow, flipping the envelope open. It was packed with cash. Fifties and hundreds. Crisp. Unmarked. Clean. I leaned back. That's a lot of money. What am I confessing to? He took a sip of his coffee, setting the cup down with surgical precision. 5 murders. I nearly laughed. You got the wrong guy. I don't take on charges that come with the needle. Gabriel smiled. That's what makes you perfect. The air between us got heavier. I felt it. Predatory. This wasn't like the other deals. Most guys came to me out of desperation. They were scared, they were weak, they needed me to save their skin. Gabriel wasn't desperate. He was hunting. I should have walked away. I should have closed the envelope, told him to go to hell, and left that diner without looking back. But I didn't. Because $50,000 is a hard number to ignore. Because deep down, I loved the game. Because my arrogance whispered in my ear, you've done this 100 times before. So I leaned in. Give me the details. Gabriel reached into his coat and pulled out a folder. Not just any folder. One of those thick, manila government-issued ones. Like something a cop would have. That should have been my second red flag. He opened it, and my stomach turned. Crime scene photos. High definition. Clear as day. 5 bodies. 5 different places. Different murder weapons. Different injuries. But one thing was the same. The look in their eyes. Terror. Everything you need to know is here, Gabriel said, tapping the folder. Read it. Memorize it. Make it yours. I flipped through the pages. Details. Dates. Weapons. Locations. It was too much information. Too thorough. I had done enough of these jobs to know that even the guilty didn't have this much detail. You sure you want to give me all this? I asked, trying to keep my voice steady. Gabriel smiled, leaning forward. His voice was low, but his words hit like a gut punch. You think I don't already know you, Connor? My spine locked. I didn't tell him my name. I never gave him my name. Gabriel kept smiling, watching my reaction like a scientist watching an experiment. You're good at what you do, he continued, voice like silk. But I'm better. I should have walked away. But I didn't. And that's how it started. That's how I ended up confessing to crimes I didn't commit. That's how I ended up with blood on my hands, blood that wasn't mine. And that's how I ended up in an FBI interrogation room, staring at a murder I didn't remember committing. I was a sin eater. But this time, the sin was eating me. Chapter 2, The Devil's Retainer. I should have walked away from that diner. I should have looked Gabriel in his cold, unreadable eyes, told him to keep his 50 grand, and gotten the hell out of there. But I didn't. And the thing is, I still don't know why. Maybe it was the money. That's the easy answer. 50 grand for a confession is no small payday, and I'd taken on jobs for much less. It was supposed to be a transaction, just like any other. Money for words. Lies for freedom. I never thought about it beyond that, never questioned whether I was digging my own grave with every fake confession. Or maybe it was something deeper. A kind of arrogance. A thrill. I had spent years outsmarting cops, DAs, and judges, making them believe I was guilty when I wasn't. Maybe I wanted to prove to myself that I could do it again. That no matter how high the stakes got, I could still play the game and win. But looking back now, I think it was something darker. I think on some level, I knew Gabriel was more than just a client. I knew he was dangerous. And I still said yes. The moment I took the folder home, the nightmares started. They weren't normal nightmares. I've had plenty of those before. The kind that come with the job, the kind that haunt you after spending too much time in dark places, making deals with men you'd cross the street to avoid. But these dreams, they weren't just dreams. They were memories. I saw it in flashes at first, quick, brutal, disjointed. A woman gasping for breath, her hands clawing at a deep gash in her throat. The sound of a struggle in a dimly lit alley. A man pleading for his life, eyes wide with the kind of terror that only comes when you know you're about to die. Then the worst part. The smell. Coppery. Thick. Heavy in the air. Blood. I woke up gasping, heart hammering against my ribs, sweat slick on my back. My fingers trembled as I grabbed the bottle of whiskey from my nightstand and took a deep pull, letting the burn scorch away the lingering ghosts of the dream. Just a nightmare. That's all it was. But it didn't feel like one. It felt real. I should have dropped the job right then and there. I should have taken Gabriel's money, burned the damn folder, and gone into hiding. Instead, I got up, poured myself another drink, and read the file again. I didn't realize it then, but something inside me had already started to change. 2 days later, I made the call. The police station smelled like sweat and bad coffee. A rookie cop at the front desk barely glanced at me before pushing a clipboard across the counter. "Fill this out," he muttered. I didn't. Instead, I leaned in, lowered my voice just enough to sound like a man with something to lose, and said, "I need to talk to a detective." That got his attention. He looked up, eyes narrowing. "About what?" I exhaled, let my shoulders tense, my jaw tighten. "Playing the part." "Murder," I said. 10 minutes later, I was in an interrogation room. Detective Jack Mercer was exactly what I expected. A middle-aged cop with tired eyes, a rumpled shirt, and an expression that said he'd seen too much bullshit to be impressed by mine. "All right," he said, tossing a notebook onto the metal table between us. "Let's hear it." I nodded, cleared my throat. Then, I started talking. I told him everything. The way the knife cut deep. The way the victims gasped. The way the body crumpled onto the pavement, still twitching even after the life had bled out of it. I gave him details. The kind of details only a killer would know. Mercer didn't interrupt. He just watched me, his gaze sharp, dissecting. When I finished, he leaned forward. "Why are you telling me this now?" I swallowed. Sold the lie. "Couldn't live with it anymore," I said. Needed to come clean. Silence stretched between us. A heavy, suffocating thing. Then, Mercer sighed and stood up. "All right. Sit tight." And just like that, he left the room. I leaned back in my chair, exhaling slowly. It was done. Confession made. Case closed. Easy money. So why did I still feel like my skin was crawling? Why did it still feel like someone was watching me? A sharp knock on the two-way mirror made me jolt. The door swung open, and Mercer came back in. Only this time, he wasn't alone. A woman followed behind him. Dark suit. Slick back hair. Eyes like a wolf sniffing out fresh meat. FBI. Fuck. She sat down across from me, folding her hands on the table. "Mr. Hayes," she said, voice smooth but firm. That was quite the confession. I forced a smirk. "Yeah, well, guess I'm not good at keeping secrets." She tilted her head, studying me. Then, she pulled out a folder of her own, flipped it open, and my stomach dropped. Because those weren't the same crime scene photos Gabriel had given me. These were new. Different angles. Different victims. Murders that hadn't happened yet. My mouth went dry. My heart stopped. The agent tapped her nails against the table. "You said you killed 5 people," she said. "So tell me, Mr. Hayes." She slid a new photo across the table. A fresh crime scene. A woman, her throat slashed, blood pooling beneath her. "This one happened last night." She leaned forward. Her voice was calm. "But you already knew that, didn't you?" My whole body locked up. Because I did know. I saw it. I felt it. But I wasn't there. I wasn't fucking there. I clenched my jaw, shoving the panic down deep. This was a trick. Had to be. They were trying to rattle me. So I forced a smirk. "Lean back. Lady, I confessed to 5 murders. That ain't one of them." She didn't blink. "But it matches your pattern. Right down to the way the knife was used. Right down to the way the victim was posed." She paused. Then, for the first time, she smiled. "You confessed to 5, Mr. Hayes." She slid another photo forward. Another body. Another murder. "But there are 10. My stomach lurched. I couldn't move. Couldn't breathe. Gabriel. He was still killing. And he was making sure every death led straight back to me. I swallowed hard. This wasn't just a setup. This was a death sentence. And I had just confessed to it. Chapter 3, The Blood Memory. I sat there, staring at the crime scene photos, my fingers curled so tight against the cold metal table that my knuckles turned white. My pulse hammered in my ears, drowning out every rational thought, every carefully constructed lie I had built over the years. I had walked into this room thinking I was in control, thinking I was running my usual con. Confess. Collect. Walk away clean. But now I was drowning in a nightmare I didn't understand. The photos were spread out before me, a twisted fan of violence and finality. The victims all bore the same marks, deep slashes across their throats, jagged but precise, a signature of whoever the real killer was. Their bodies were arranged in deliberate poses, arms outstretched, heads tilted slightly to the side as if they had been placed, not simply discarded. But none of that was what made my stomach twist into knots. What made the walls feel like they were closing in was the fact that I knew these details before she ever put the photos in front of me. I had seen them, felt them, lived them. The glint of the blade in dim alleyway light. The wet, gasping sounds of breath leaking from open throats. The way their eyes locked on mine in those final, helpless moments. Except it wasn't me. It wasn't fucking me. The FBI agent, Agent Sloan, as I now knew her, watched me like a lion watches a wounded gazelle, waiting to see if I'd bolt, if I'd break, if I'd talk. "You look pale, Mr. Hayes," she said smoothly, tapping one of the photos with the tip of her fingernail. "Feeling sick." I swallowed back the bile rising in my throat and forced myself to sit back in my chair. I needed to think, needed to get ahead of this before it swallowed me whole. "You're trying to rattle me," I said, keeping my voice calm. "Good cop, bad cop routine, huh? Get me confessing to something I didn't do." Sloan just smiled. "Interesting," she mused. "You walked in here confessing to 5 murders. But the second I show you 5 more, suddenly you're innocent." She leaned in slightly, her scent sharp and clean like expensive soap, her presence overwhelming, like a noose tightening around my throat. "Tell me something, Mr. Hayes," she said, voice dipping into something almost gentle, like a mother coaxing a confession from a child. "How did you know the details of those first 5 murders before we ever released them to the public?" My jaw clenched. I had been so careful. So fucking careful. Every confession I ever made was fed to me by the people who actually did the crimes. I never knew more than what they told me, never incriminated myself beyond what was necessary to make it stick. That was the game. Except this time, the details had felt different. Too clear. Too personal. Like they were mine. Like I had actually been there. I kept my expression blank, tried to regain control. "Maybe I've got friends in low places," I said. "You ever think of that? Maybe someone tipped me off, and I'm just playing my part." Sloan tilted her head. "Oh, I think someone tipped you off, all right," she said. "But I don't think you're playing anymore. I think you got in too deep." She slid another photo forward. A woman. Blonde. Mid-30s. her hands tied behind her back, her eyes staring up at the ceiling, empty. Her throat. I jerked my gaze away before the memory could slam into me like a freight train. Sloane saw it. I know she did. You recognize her, don't you? She murmured. I shook my head. No. Liar. She said it so softly, but it hit me like a gunshot. I inhaled sharply through my nose, fought to keep my hands from shaking. You think I killed them? I said. Really? You think I waltzed in here, confessed to 5 random murders, and then just forgot about 5 more? Sloane leaned back in her chair, completely at ease while I was about 2 seconds away from fucking falling apart. I think Gabriel made you a very dangerous offer, she said. And I think you took it without realizing what it really meant. My head snapped up. Gabriel. I repeated, my mouth suddenly dry. I hadn't told them his name. Sloane smiled again. Oh, we know all about Gabriel. We just don't know who he really is. And apparently, neither do you. The next few hours blurred into a whirlwind of questions, accusations, threats. Sloane pressed me, tried to pin me down on inconsistencies in my story. The timeline, the details, the things I should have known versus the things I shouldn't. I fought back where I could, dodged when I needed to, but no matter what I said, it didn't matter. They had already decided I was guilty. By the time they let me go, my head was pounding. They had no official reason to hold me. No evidence placing me at the scenes, no DNA, nothing that could tie me to the crimes beyond my own confession. But they weren't letting me walk clean either. Sloane made that much clear. You're a loose end, she said as she handed me back my things. And I don't like loose ends. I forced a smirk. I'll sleep better knowing that. She smirked back, but there was no humor in it. You won't sleep at all, Mr. Hayes. And with that, she turned and walked away. I stepped out into the night, inhaling the cool air like a drowning man breaking the surface. My mind was spinning, my stomach twisting into knots. I needed answers. Gabriel had set me up. That much was clear. But why? What the fuck had I gotten myself into? And more importantly, how did I know things I had no way of knowing? I pulled out my phone, my fingers shaking as I scrolled through my contacts. No messages. No calls. No sign of Gabriel. Of course not. The bastard had disappeared. I swallowed hard, staring down at the photos still burned into my memory. This wasn't just about playing the system anymore. I wasn't just a guy confessing to someone else's crimes. Somehow, someway, I was remembering them. And if that was true, then maybe the biggest question wasn't whether the FBI thought I was guilty. Maybe the biggest question was whether they were right. Chapter 4, A Sinner's Guilt. I didn't sleep that night. Didn't even try. I sat in my darkened apartment, a half-empty bottle of whiskey clutched in my hand, staring at the walls like they held the answers to the nightmare unraveling around me. My mind wouldn't stop spinning. My pulse wouldn't slow. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw them, the bodies, the way they fell, the way the light dimmed in their eyes as life bled out of them. I wasn't there. I knew that. Logically, I knew I had never held that knife, had never stood over those people, watching the light leave their faces. But my brain didn't seem to give a fuck about logic. Because when I blinked, when my breath hitched in my chest, when I let myself sink into the weight of it all, I remembered the feeling of a knife handle pressing into my palm. The rush of the kill. The silence after. And that scared me more than anything. I spent hours replaying my meeting with Gabriel in my head, trying to find the moment I should have walked away. The moment I should have known. The man wasn't just a client. He was something else. The way he spoke, the way he watched me, the way he knew my name before I ever gave it to him. All of it pointed to something deeper, something I had been too blind, too greedy, too fucking stupid to see at the time. He didn't just want a fall guy. He wanted a scapegoat. And I had practically gift-wrapped myself for him. Now there were 10 murders on the table instead of 5, and the FBI was looking at me like I was the next goddamn Bundy. Worse, I didn't know if they were wrong. Because whatever Gabriel had done, whatever game he was playing, he had gotten inside my head. And I couldn't shake the feeling that I was one step away from believing I had actually done it. By dawn, my apartment felt like a coffin, the walls pressing in, the silence deafening. I needed air. So I grabbed my jacket, shoved my gun into the waistband of my jeans, and walked out into the early morning streets of the city. The air was crisp, carrying the scent of damp pavement and car exhaust. The city was waking up, but my mind felt like it was still trapped in the fog of whatever the fuck Gabriel had done to me. I had one goal. Find him. Find Gabriel, make him talk, make him explain why I could feel crimes I had never committed rattling around inside my skull like ghosts refusing to move on. And if I didn't like his answer, I'd put a bullet in his head. Simple. I started with the only lead I had, the diner. Manny's was open 24/7, and it was the kind of place where people didn't ask questions. If Gabriel had used it as a meeting spot before, maybe someone had seen him. Maybe someone could tell me where the fuck he had disappeared to. I pushed through the glass doors, the bell overhead jingling as I stepped inside. The place was mostly empty, just a couple of truckers nursing coffee in the corner and an old man reading a newspaper at the counter. I slid into the same booth where I had met Gabriel, tapping my fingers restlessly against the table as a waitress approached. "Coffee?" she asked, already pouring before I could answer. "Yeah," I muttered. "And some information." She paused, one eyebrow arching. "This ain't that kind of place, hon." I slipped a $100 bill across the table. "It is now." She eyed the cash, then sighed, tucking it into the pocket of her apron. "What do you want to know?" "A guy came in a few days ago," I said. "Well-dressed. Expensive watch. Called himself Gabriel. You see him before?" Her brow furrowed, like she was searching her memory. Then slowly she nodded. "Yeah," she said. "He's been in a few times. Always sits in the back, never talks much. But there's something about him, you know? Like, when he's around, the air feels different." She shivered slightly, as if remembering something unpleasant. "Different how?" I pressed. "Like, he's watching everything. Like he's waiting." A chill crawled down my spine. I swallowed, trying to keep my voice steady. "You ever see him with anyone else?" She hesitated. Then she nodded. "Once," she murmured. "He was with a guy. Tall, shaved head, real serious looking. They didn't talk much, but when they did, I dunno, it felt like they weren't having a normal conversation. It was like..." She struggled to find the words, frowning. "Like what?" I asked, my pulse spiking. "Like they already knew what the other was gonna say before they said it." My stomach twisted. "What did the other guy look like?" "Like trouble," she muttered. "And I ain't seen him since." "Great. Real fucking helpful." I sighed, rubbing a hand over my face. "You remember the last time you saw Gabriel?" She nodded. "2 nights ago. The night of the most recent murder." My breath caught. "You know where he went after?" "No," she admitted. "But he left in a car. Black sedan, tinted windows. No plates." "Of course. The bastard was a ghost." But I wasn't giving up. I pulled another $100 from my pocket and slid it to her. "If you see him again, you call me." She hesitated. Then she took the bill and nodded. "Sure thing, hon." I slid out of the booth, my mind racing. Gabriel had been here 2 nights ago. That meant he was still in the city. That meant I had a chance to find him before the feds did. And if I found him first, I was gonna get some goddamn answers. As I stepped back outside, my phone buzzed in my pocket. I pulled it out, my blood running cold at the unknown number flashing on the screen. I hesitated. Then I answered. "Silence." Then, "Connor." Gabriel's voice. Smooth. Unbothered. Like he had been waiting for me to call. My grip tightened around the phone. "Where the fuck are you?" I demanded. He chuckled. "Close," he murmured. "Closer than you think." My pulse pounded. "You set me up, you son of a bitch." A pause. Then, "I gave you an opportunity," he said. "And you took it." My stomach twisted. "What the hell did you do to me?" Another chuckle. "I think you already know." Before I could respond, the line went dead. And I stood there, phone still pressed to my ear, heart hammering, as one terrifying realization sank in. This wasn't just about framing me. This wasn't just about making me a scapegoat. Gabriel had done something to me. And I was starting to think that maybe, just maybe, I really had blood on my hands. And I just couldn't remember. Chapter 5, The Judas Play. The line went dead, but Gabriel's voice still echoed in my skull like a gunshot in a tight space. "I think you already know." No, I didn't know. That was the problem. And the more I tried to tell myself that this was just another con gone wrong, that this was just a setup, the more I felt the edges of something worse creeping into my thoughts. Something I didn't want to acknowledge. Because if Gabriel had really fucked with me, if he had really done something to my mind, then maybe I wasn't just the fall guy. Maybe I was the weapon. I forced myself to move, to breathe, to push forward, even though my body felt like it was lagging behind my thoughts, disconnected from reality. I needed answers. I needed a plan. But most of all, I needed to know what the fuck Gabriel had done to me before I lost the ability to tell the difference between his sins and my own. and I had one place left to go. I knew a guy. His name was Devin Reyes, and if there was anything unnatural, psychological, or completely fucked up happening to me, he was the guy who could figure it out. Reyes used to be a shrink for the FBI, until they burned him. He had a habit of digging too deep, pulling apart minds like puzzle boxes, finding things he wasn't supposed to find. They called him paranoid, delusional, dangerous. And maybe he was. But right now, I needed dangerous. Reyes lived in a tiny, cluttered apartment in the back end of the city, the kind of place where the smell of mildew fought with the stench of cigarette smoke, where newspapers were stacked so high you had to navigate through them like a rat in a maze. He opened the door after the second knock, his eyes bloodshot and sunken, his hair a wild mess of silver streaks and dark curls. "Well, well," he murmured, his voice hoarse from years of smoking. "If it isn't the world's most charming liar." I didn't waste time. I pushed past him, stepping inside, ignoring the clutter as I turned to face him. "I need your help," I said. Reyes arched a brow, lighting a cigarette with shaking fingers. "What's new?" I exhaled sharply. "This is different." I hesitated, then forced the words out before I could stop myself. "I think someone's put memories in my head." Reyes paused. His lighter flickered, casting strange shadows across his face. Then he laughed. Not a chuckle. A full, deep, throat-ripping laugh that made my skin crawl. "Oh, you poor bastard," he murmured. "You finally met a real one, huh?" I frowned. "What the hell does that mean?" Reyes took a long drag, exhaled a cloud of smoke, and then fixed me with a look that made my stomach drop. "You ever hear of synthetic memory transference?" he asked. I blinked. "What?" "You wouldn't," he muttered, pacing now, his cigarette burning down between his fingers. "Because it doesn't officially exist. But if someone wanted to, hypothetically, of course, they could implant memories into another person's subconscious. Make them believe they'd done things they'd never actually done. Make them feel it. Smell it. Live it. Hell, maybe even dream about it until they couldn't tell the difference." The floor beneath me felt unsteady. "That's not possible," I said, but my voice was too thin, too uncertain. Reyes snorted. "Yeah. Tell that to the government contracts that disappeared back in the 90s. Tell that to the black market neurologists who specialize in fucking with people's heads. Tell that to whoever the hell put you in my goddamn apartment at 2 in the morning looking like a man who just woke up from a murder spree he didn't commit." My hands clenched into fists. "Gabriel," I whispered. Reyes nodded, eyes dark. "Yeah, Gabriel." I sat down hard on the couch, my heart pounding. "If what you're saying is true," I said slowly, "then that means the murders, the ones I confessed to, were his," Reyes finished. "And he made them yours." The world felt like it was tilting. My breath came sharp and shallow, my thoughts racing too fast to hold onto. It all made sense now. The details I couldn't have known. The sensations I had no business feeling. The way my memories felt like memories, even though I knew they weren't. I had been set up, not just as a scapegoat, as a carrier. Gabriel had implanted his own goddamn sins into my mind. And now, the FBI was hunting me for them. Reyes grabbed me by the shoulders suddenly, shaking me. "Listen to me," he hissed. "They're gonna pin all of this on you. You know that, right? You're already halfway to being the perfect suspect. You confessed. You know details no one should know. And now you don't even know if you're innocent." I gritted my teeth. "So what the hell do I do?" He let go, sighing. "You do what you do best, Connor. You lie. You make a play. And you beat him at his own fucking game." I left Reyes' apartment with one thing on my mind. Judas play. If Gabriel wanted me to take the fall, then I was going to turn the tables. I was going to sell him out. But not to the cops. To the feds. I pulled out my phone, heart pounding as I dialed the only number that mattered. Agent Sloan's voice came through the line, sharp and alert despite the late hour. "Mr. Hayes," she said, her tone dripping with suspicion. "Finally ready to admit the truth?" I exhaled. "I'll give you Gabriel," I said. Silence. Then, "I'm listening." I swallowed hard. "But I don't just want a deal," I murmured. "I want protection." She paused. "From what?" I glanced at my reflection in the dirty glass of a store window, staring into my own tired, haunted eyes. "From myself," I whispered. Because no matter how much I wanted to believe this was all a trick, no matter how much I wanted to believe that Gabriel had fucked with my mind, a small, terrifying part of me still wasn't sure. A part of me still whispered, "What if you really did do it?" Chapter 6, The Final Sin. Agent Sloan's silence on the other end of the line stretched long enough for doubt to claw its way into my gut. Had I pushed too hard? Had I played my hand too early? Then finally, where and when? I exhaled. Not over the phone. You don't get to call the shots, Mr. Hayes. If you want a deal, you give me something first. Otherwise, I don't give a damn what happens to you. Her voice was sharp, unforgiving. I expected as much. But she wasn't the only one in the room holding a loaded gun. Gabriel isn't just a killer, I said, keeping my voice steady. He's something else. He's bigger than this. And if you don't believe me, then you've already lost. A pause. Then more softly. What do you mean, bigger? I glanced around, paranoia sinking into my bones. The streetlights overhead flickered, their glow casting long, skeletal shadows across the pavement. A car idled too long at the corner. My skin crawled. Gabriel was always watching. Always listening. You need to get me somewhere safe, I said. We talk in person, nowhere near this phone, nowhere near surveillance. Sloan didn't respond right away, but I could feel her deliberating, weighing whether I was worth the trouble. Then finally, meet me at Pier 14. Midnight. Click. She was gone. And I was out of time. I didn't go straight to the pier. Gabriel wasn't going to let me walk away that easily. I knew the rules of this game. If he had gone through all the trouble of planting those memories, setting me up for a crime spree that wasn't mine, then he wasn't just going to let me play Judas. No. He was going to cut me loose before I could talk. So I played smart. I didn't take my usual routes. I doubled back, used alleys, walked through buildings, slipped into crowds. But the paranoia never left, the feeling of eyes drilling into the back of my head, the certainty that at any moment, I'd hear the whisper of footsteps behind me, the click of a gun being drawn. By the time I reached the pier, the city felt like a noose tightening around my throat, and Gabriel was the one holding the rope. Sloan was already waiting when I got there. She was standing near the edge of the pier, hands in the pockets of her coat, her silhouette outlined against the shimmering black water. There was no backup in sight. No flashing FBI vans. No tactical units waiting in the shadows. I knew better than to believe she came alone, though. She turned as I approached, her expression unreadable. You look like you haven't slept in a week, she said. I snorted. That's generous. She studied me for a beat, then nodded toward the water. Talk. I took a deep breath, trying to shove down the nausea swirling in my gut. I was set up, I said. And not just in the way you think. She arched a brow. Explain. I hesitated, searching for the words, for some way to make this sound even remotely believable. Gabriel, he's not just covering his tracks. He's erasing them. And he's doing it by making me the perfect suspect. I don't just have information about the crimes. I have memories of them. Memories I never should have. Sloane's expression remained unreadable, but I saw the slight shift in her stance. The way her fingers twitched like she wanted to reach for her gun, but wasn't sure yet. Memories, she echoed. I nodded. They're in my head. Real. Vivid. I see them when I close my eyes. I feel them. I dream about them like I was there. And you think he put them there? I exhaled sharply. I know how it sounds. But Reyes. Reyes. She stiffened. You know him. She didn't answer. Which meant yes. Shit. That meant I wasn't just in deep. I was drowning. I ran a hand over my face. He told me about memory transference. About synthetic implants. He said there are ways to make someone believe they committed a crime they never did. And if that's true, then Gabriel is using me to cover his tracks. He's making me his goddamn fall guy. For the first time, Sloan looked shaken. Not much. Just a flicker. But it was enough. You really expect me to believe that? She asked, but her voice had lost some of its bite. I took a step closer, lowering my voice. You already do, I said. Because if you didn't, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Her jaw clenched. She was listening now. She didn't trust me. But she wasn't dismissing it either. Progress. Then, a sound behind me. Too fast. Too close. Instinct kicked in. I turned just as the gun went off. The bullet missed my head by inches, slamming into the pier's wooden railing with a sharp, splintering crack. I dropped to the ground, rolling behind a metal crate as another shot rang out. Sloan was already moving, drawing her weapon, shouting something I barely registered over the roar of blood in my ears. Then I saw him, Gabriel, standing at the far end of the pier, smiling like the devil himself. Connor, he called out, his voice calm, smooth, completely unfazed. I was hoping you'd come alone. my hands clenched into fists. Fuck you, he'd said, shaking his head. Now, is that any way to talk to the man who gave you a new life? I gritted my teeth. You mean the man who's trying to kill me? Gabriel's smile widened. No, Connor. I'm the man who made you. And I'm the only one who can unmake you. Another gunshot. This one wasn't from him. Sloane had fired. Gabriel moved fast. Too fast. He vanished into the shadows, his laughter lingering in the air like a ghost. Then silence. Sloane and I stood there, panting, our breath misting in the cold air. Then she turned to me, her face unreadable. Still think you're just a fall guy? I swallowed hard. No, I wasn't just a fall guy anymore. I was bait. And the worst part, I still didn't know who I was really working for. Chapter 7, The Sin Eater Dies. I could still hear Gabriel's laughter in my head long after he disappeared. That low, taunting sound, the kind of laugh that gets under your skin and stays there, festering like an infection. I was done running. Done trying to outthink a man who had already thought of everything. I had one play left. I was going to kill him. Sloane didn't say a word as we left the pier, walking in silence toward her car. She was thinking, probably deciding whether she should arrest me or put a bullet in my head and call it justice. Where do we go from here? I asked finally, my voice hoarse. She let out a slow breath, staring at me like I was a puzzle she couldn't quite figure out. I don't trust you, she said. Smart. But I trust Gabriel less. That was something. Then let's end this, I said. She hesitated. Then she nodded. And just like that, we were hunting the devil together. We started with what little I had left. Reyes, the man who had already risked too much by talking to me. If anyone knew how Gabriel was pulling this off, if anyone had even the slightest clue what was happening inside my head, it was him. We drove through the city in silence, the weight of everything pressing down like a noose slowly tightening. I watched the streets pass by in a blur, watched people going about their normal lives, completely unaware of the war unfolding in the shadows. A war I was now deeply entangled in. A war I wasn't sure I'd survive. We pulled up to Reyes' apartment just after 2 a.m. The building was dark, the kind of place where the landlord stopped caring a decade ago. Sloane and I stepped inside, moving fast, taking the stairs two at a time. But the second we reached Reyes' door, my stomach dropped. The door was open. Not kicked in. Just open. Like someone had been there. Like someone had left it that way. Sloane and I exchanged a look, and then guns up, breath held, we stepped inside. The apartment was quiet. Too quiet. No stacks of newspapers. No scattered coffee mugs. No smell of cigarettes lingering in the air. Nothing. Because Reyes was gone. The entire place had been cleaned out. Like he had never existed at all. Sloane walked through the space, checking the corners, but I already knew what she was going to say before she even turned back to me. He's not here, she said grimly. No shit. I clenched my jaw, my fingers tightening around the grip of my gun. Gabriel had gotten to him first. The feeling of failure was sharp, cutting deep. Reyes was my one shot at understanding what Gabriel had done to me. Now he was gone, and all I had left were my own fucking nightmares. Sloane studied me for a long moment, her expression unreadable. We still have a shot, she said. If we find Gabriel before he finds you. I let out a hollow laugh. Oh, agent. He's already found me. Her gaze darkened. Then let's flip the script. I frowned. What are you talking about? She crossed her arms. We make you the bait. We set the trap. And we lure him out. I stared at her. You want to use me as live bait for a fucking serial killer? She shrugged. Worked out for you so far, didn't it? She wasn't wrong. Gabriel wanted me dead. He had been pulling the strings from the start. So maybe it was time for me to start pulling back. I exhaled. Fine. Let's end this. The trap was simple. I'd go on the run. No Sloane. No backup. No weapons. Just me, out in the open, looking desperate. Gabriel would come for me. He wouldn't be able to resist. And when he did, Sloane would be waiting. Simple. Except nothing was ever that fucking simple. We set the bait at an abandoned warehouse in the south side of the city. A place with one way in, one way out. I sat on the floor, pretending to be broken, exhausted, hopeless. Pretending like I didn't know Gabriel was coming. And then, finally, he arrived. The air changed before I even saw him. Like a shift in pressure. Like a storm rolling in. Then footsteps. Slow. Controlled. Deliberate. I didn't move. Didn't breathe. Then, Connor. Gabriel's voice rang through the empty space, smooth as ever. I looked up, and there he was, standing across the warehouse, hands in his pockets, smiling. "Funny," he mused, tilting his head. "I expected you to run." I forced a weak chuckle. "Didn't see the point." He took a step closer. "Because you're finally starting to understand, aren't you?" I swallowed. "Understand what?" His smile widened. "You're me." The words slammed into me like a punch to the gut. I shook my head. "No. You feel it, don't you? The memories. The thrill. The hunger." I clenched my fists. "You're lying," I hissed. He just laughed. "I made you, Connor. You were just another liar, another thief, another desperate fool selling false confessions for scraps. But now, you're something more." I gritted my teeth. "You're wrong." Gabriel tilted his head. "Then why are your hands shaking?" I looked down. Fuck. He was right. My hands were shaking. And then, bang. Gunshot. Sloan. Gabriel twisted, but he was fast, too fast. He moved before the bullet could land, diving into the shadows. I scrambled to my feet, my heart hammering. Another gunshot. More movement. I caught a glimpse of Gabriel disappearing into the dark. I had one shot. One chance. I grabbed the gun from my waistband, aimed, and pulled the trigger. The shot rang out, echoing through the warehouse. Gabriel stumbled. I saw the flicker of pain cross his face. But then, he smiled. "Good boy," he murmured. Then he collapsed. Silence. Sloane approached slowly, gun still raised, her breathing ragged. I stared down at Gabriel's body, at the blood pooling beneath him, at the man who had ruined my life. And I felt nothing. No relief. No triumph. Just emptiness. Because even though Gabriel was dead, his sins were still inside me. And they weren't going anywhere. I walked out of that warehouse a free man. But I wasn't free. Not really. Because no matter where I went, no matter how far I ran, I'd never stop wondering. Did Gabriel put the memories in my head? Or did he just unlock something that was already there? And if he did, then how long until I kill again?